episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Wario Will.
Happy Unicorn Overlord release day, everybody. And yes, we are heading into March. Yeah, first podcast.
First podcast in March. That's correct. Remember, leap year.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that. And we're heading into March. It's finally getting warmer now, thankfully. So, yeah, I'm just really glad that hopefully things looking up a bit more, especially here in the gaming industry of these days. Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, I am proud to say we have no layoff stories this week, but, you know.
You never know.
Week's not over yet. Week's not over yet. But it is the first one of March. I am disappointed in you, Will, that you don't remember that last week was not just the leap year, but was Final Fantasy VII Rebirth release. How could you not remember that?
Yes.
I know why, because it's collector's edition didn't come in on time.
I mean, now it has this past week. Again, I blame, let's check out the geography here in the US of A. Like, I believe in the Midwest, it was raiding storms. That's why it was delayed. So I don't know what happened with it. So, but heck, I got to know. I got my 19 inches in.
So you're saying you got your 19 inches in? Really? That's rather deep, Will.
Sounds painful.
So, also, we all know that the post office doesn't exactly work properly at times. I remember during a Kickstarter, I had a person in Indiana who I was mailing to. And I had a person, I think it was in Florida, I think. And I mailed it out. And 2 days later, the guy from Florida messages me and goes, "Hey, just want to let you know, got it in." Thanks, man. Thanks for letting me know. And I wait a few more days, and I message my guy in Indiana, and I go, "Hey, have you got your package yet?" And he goes, "No." What? I'm in Illinois. Indiana's literally next door. I could literally drive it to Indiana if I wanted to. I'm not going to, but I could. And I kid you not, it took not just 2 weeks, but when the package finally got there, it was freaking destroyed. It was wet. It was ran over by a car, apparently, or something. And I'm like, what in the ever-living fork? So I willingly remailed him a package straight from the printer so that there would be none of this nonsense. So sometimes mailing just isn't as simple as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of not being as simple as it should be, Skull Kid Scott.
Hello. As much as I wish it was warmer here, it's all rain right now.
Yeah. It's been hovering here. This week has been, I think 2 days ago I didn't have my heater on, but then today it was hovering around 50 and I just felt chilly. Then last week, before the podcast, we had a 70 day.
Yeah, yeah. So past Sunday was summer. Yeah.
Yeah, I felt great. It was warm. I didn't even have to put socks on because my feet were actually roasting at points. And then the next day was 40. I'm like, crap. Dang pendulum temperatures. So, for the record, we're not just talking about this because we want to. It's because, honestly, we have a bit of a lighter show for you tonight. But we will keep it light and have fun by starting off with, what have you been playing? Okay, I got to start that right. Hiccup right in the middle.
Thank you.
We're going to all start off with, what have you been playing? I'll go first this time because, as usual, I had the beginning of my month, which means I didn't have much time to play anything. So the only thing I've been playing is Apologestus Trilogy. I'm getting close to the end. I'm in the fifth chapter, story, whatever, and I'm getting to the good stuff. And I still really love this game. But there's a character that in the beginning parts of the first of the fifth chapter that you just want to punch, almost as much as you want to punch the Embracer CEO dude. This guy's on that level of bad. His name is, I kid you not, Paul Asherton Wimperton. Nice name. And
what a wimp.
What exactly? And he is a politician, spoiled brat, thinks he's entitled to everything. Almost kills Apollo and his father in a cave, which is bold even for him because he's really skinny. But when they don't see it coming, right? And he acts 1,000% like a politician. He only answers what he wants to answer. He only talks about what he wants to talk about. I'm just like, can I just kill him? Can I just kill the dude? Don't worry, he'll get his justice soon enough, pun intended. But it's just I love this game, but man, like I really could have done without this character. You know, that one in balloons, right, Will? Balloons. So I'm honestly gonna be playing that, and I played a little bit of Fire Emblem Heroes tonight, doing the Tempest Trial, because you know I just like to do it. But I still have over 1,000 orbs, so I'm not gonna push myself like I usually do. And I have a Comic Con this weekend, so I've been so busy trying to get a whole lot done. And I had a con last weekend. It's gonna be a busy couple months for me. So I've honestly been stressing myself out just trying to get everything done. And I did. I got everything done before the show tonight, so I hopefully will be able to sleep. I won't. But because I gotta wake up at 4 a.m. to go to Kansas City for Planet City Comic Con. So if you are in the area, look me up. I can't remember my booth number, but just look up Todd Black. You should be able to find me. Look for the hair. I mean, come on, that's the obvious giveaway. So yeah, next week I will have more time to enjoy myself and play more games, and I am looking forward to it. I'm going to be so tired by Monday, but I will endure. I will endure. All right, Will, what about you? What have you been playing?
So first things first, one, continuing on my treks on Persona 3 Reload, I am at that the final month. I'm currently just making my way through the final block in Tartarus, I think. Last I checked, I was like 220 something, like doing a little bit of the boss gauntlet at the moment right now, so just kind of going through that moment. I am more or less getting like almost done with all the trophy huntings. Again, I just need to go make Messiah as well as defeat the Reaper, and that pretty much is it regarding to trophy wise. But of course the other thing that obviously finally came in this past weekend was, this past week, beginning of the week, was indeed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And due to the circumstances, I actually had a lot of time to actually finally play this thing. And holy moly. Like, the best way I could probably describe it, in my opinion, is basically, like, you could see the Witcher influence. Like you can see, like, again, like Hamaguchi, the producers, like, says, like, they were really influenced by like a Horizon or Witcher. You can see the influence right here, and essentially, it basically also reminds me a little bit of the Yakuza formula, as like with all these side quests in between, like basically, it's just expanded Yakuza in a sense, like Final Fantasy Yakuza, like this whole world, big open world. I'm currently right now in Juna, just finished up with the World Intel, and World Intel, the Four Condors, all these different mini games. The fact that I would just, like, up to this point, I finished up to June on 100%ing all everything, including like with the special hunts and all that, is like it's a lot to do. Like, especially I can see how, like, in each part of the world, like each new map, new cow you explore, you will get like the new mini games, like one with the, the one in Juna, you get Fort Condor, and I just recently finished up in hard mode, which, yeah, not very fun, not very fun, very tedious, but it was doable. But yeah, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth so far is just, it is big, like. Even at the rate I'm going at the moment right now, is I feel like there's still so much I can do. Like, once you get the World Intel, I can finally move on past to the story missions, and it's just absolutely amazing. So I could talk about more. And of course, just quick note, Queen's Blood, holy moly. I can see why it could be addicting. Like, Queen's Blood is just, could be that kind of an extra game itself, which, yeah. Gwent, yeah, you got competition. You got competition. So, yeah, overall, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, like, no doubt about it, if you have a PS5, by all means, get this game. You owe it to yourself. Like, of course, naturally, there's other games in, like, Persona 3 Reload, Yakuza 8, and, of course, Unicorn Overlord to get this off for your PS5, but there's just a lot of titles to finally satisfy your PS5 library. So, by all means, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, great game, great game. And like you, Todd, like with Fire Emblem Heroes, with tracking on here and there, I'm just really kind of interesting now that we just came off from the voting gauntlet, and yeah, everyone, it will be getting a free the new version of Peony, like a very top tier support unit. So everyone's gonna get a Peony later on down the line, and but I just kind of find it funny that this year's voting gauntlet was basically all green units, so it's just kind of that. But yeah, overall from that, yeah, that's pretty much it. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has basically taken up all my time until Unicorn Overlord comes in, whenever that comes in via my mail. So yeah, overall, yeah, RPG fans, you are eating good tonight or these next few weeks, because it is, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Or just in 2024 in general. I mean, my gosh, there's already so much come out and there's still more to come. So
yep.
Yeah, just so much. And if Final Fantasy VII Rebirth doesn't satisfy you at least for like about like 2 months, or because with that, like if you go full completion, then yeah, you'll get your money's worth. Yeah. By all means, I do want
to note that a former co-host of ours, Daisy Delilah, that's a name we haven't said in a long time, she posted that she's actually not digging Rebirth, and I'm like, ooh.
Really?
Well, she says it hasn't clicked with her yet, like it's trying to do too much, which I can understand from a certain perspective, you know. But I'm curious what her thoughts will be when she finishes the game. I don't know how far she's into it, but she says like it's doing too much, and I'm like, an interesting thought. We definitely have seen games that have tried that, you know, like they try too much.
Yeah, like other games that try like spread apart, like but unfocused, like but and there are games like that are very good at like again, Yakuza, pretty much a patchwork of mini games and genres, and yet works so well. So here in Final Fantasy, I mean, it depends. I personally enjoyed it. I didn't mind it at the moment.
Oh, I forgot to ask you a very important question about Persona 3 Reload, Will.
Shoot.
Who's your waifu?
If I only had to pick one, as obviously Mitsuru, but in like the OG game, I go for all of them. Yes, I'm a dog. I'm sorry.
Let me revise the question. Which one have you actually picked in your playthrough?
Everyone.
Wait, are you seriously doing the harem route?
The OG game allowed me it. I'm doing it in this game too.
You are going to be disappointed in the result. I already know that spoiler. But
I played the original game. I know.
But you said they allowed it in the original, which means that things have changed since then.
Nah, I was gonna see. I gotta see it. Again. I'm right near the end, so maybe we'll see the difference.
Find out. All right, Scott. I know one thing you've been playing.
Yeah, I finally finished my review of Skull and Bones.
Oh man!
Well, please tell us about this incredible quadruple A title, please.
It's boring.
Yes. Let's come on. Let's get a little deeper. Come on.
Alrighty. So I did go on a bit of a rant in the Discord when I was finally putting my thoughts on the review. And honestly, I think my biggest criticism of the game is there is no reason that this game wants you to play this game. Like, it's basically just very minor increments to, like, your ship, to, like, your weaponry, and then that's basically it. There's, like, no reason to explore, except for maybe to get, like, another trade route that may or may not have an item or a resource you want to find. There's no reason to really do much of the story, because there's no real, like, villain or antagonist in this game. Mm. It's just, like, you get built up from all these other, like, NPCs to go after other NPCs that they say are bad, and you destroy the ships, and they say, good job destroying that random ship over there. And it's just, like, you just don't care about anything in this game. The characters, the world, like, no one you really, like, grow fond of. Even the named NPCs in the game are just kind of there to build you up. Like, there's no reason for them to exist except for because of you. Like, without you, none of these characters would matter.
Mm.
And that's kind of the problem. I mean, you could say that a lot of MMOs did that, especially in the early days. But even when you had characters that were just there to help you find your way around the world, at least they, like, existed for a reason. Some of them were actually like blacksmiths or stuff. Other people are just, they're like, oh, we're the leader of this land. Okay, cool. What do you do here? I give you assignments to go help me be the leader of this land. So you do nothing. Great.
So I mean, like, it's almost to the point that I feel like Ubisoft's venture into like these kind of games, as I said, the cast is like, it's basically nobody, no name, nobody NPCs that's like, oh, you are the quote-unquote captain, okay, do one of this to help you out. Like I don't know, probably a poor example comparison is basically, I don't know, Honkai Star or any other gotchas that actually has some character that actually builds up your avatar character, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, even when you have, say, like in the Honkai Star Rail or the Genshin Impact, your main character sure does a lot, but the difference is they also have people that also do a lot without you. So it's just like you're not the only thing that matters in this world. The world itself is still alive and it has a lot of things happening, and there's a lot of like things on this clock that like matter to all these other characters, and you're just there helping them. It's not necessarily like they're there for you. So it's just like these like avatar, like faceless, nameless characters, they can be used well. It's just also they can be used extremely terrible if the whole point of them existing is to give the other characters reason to be there. It's just like if you weren't there, like everyone on the ship that you helped like supposedly save would have just died and everything would have just been back to status quo, and it would not have changed the outcome of anything in this game. The only difference is you wouldn't be the one to do it. Most likely, you'd have the other NPCs find some other random nobody to be a captain for them to do things. It's not like you're any special and you have no reason to, like, really. There's no reason to play this game. Like, honestly, doing all that stuff is just for your own enjoyment if you like it. But if you actually want to have an ambitious role or like, even like you have the idea or like the choice to be like a big bloodthirsty pirate or to be like a diplomatic merchant that just surrounds yourself with supplies and get ships to help you find more trade routes. But the difference is, regardless of what you choose, the NPCs don't give a crap. They will help you what they'll help you do whatever. You could declare war against the Navy, you could declare war against like the Spanish Inquisition, and guess what? It doesn't matter. They don't care about you. As soon as like you're out of their radar, they don't care. There's like no bounty on your head. There's no like amount of like God-fearing like bounty hunters going after you. There's no like living world that's actually going aside beside you. It's just you. You are the reason this world exists, and without you, it doesn't do anything. It just stays in stasis.
Jeez. The
So
thing, this,
that's
yeah, just hearing all that again, this is came from the influence of Black Flag. Like, how can you messed that up.
like at least with, I mean, Black Flag had a pretty good story with the pirate bits. Heck, even, I think the pirate bits was better than the Assassin's Creed bits when it came to Black Flag. So it's kind of weird that they somehow decided to say that they're taking the inspiration from that and to turn into this, because this feels like there's like no heart or soul in this game.
Hey,
And when you
play
look at
title.
like
Play title, everybody.
When you look at like the writing and stuff, you notice that there's a lot of like boards and stuff that worked on this game, which makes me wonder if like the reason why there's not a lot going on is because this was so cut down from so many writers that it just turned into, I don't know, they literally made a pirate game that is the most inoffensive game of all time.
Yeah, like everyone's basically meeting it on Twitter, basically like, oh, before you start this game, here's our morale code of service. You're playing a pirate game. What does your moral code of service?
I don't think Jack Sparrow had to agree to this.
Jeez. Yeah,
Oh,
just forget this from basically just forget this game. Just play Skull. Just play the other Sea of Thieves. Yeah, Sea
play
of
a
Thieves.
Sea of Thieves when it comes out everywhere, or just go back to Black Flag if you really want to play something like this that has some kind of heart or soul. But luckily, that wasn't the only game I played this week, because otherwise that'd have been
What?
depressing. I also played more of Rebirth, which was very nice. I don't want to give too much. Oh, I don't want to give any spoilers because it's definitely an experience.
Where you are on top of right now?
I'm at chapter 7. I'm at the coral reactor
Damn.
right now.
Jeez. Okay, you're
I'm
way
not
ahead of me.
100%ing it. I'm only 100%ing the stuff that I want to do, like the summoning, like the materia for summons.
Okay, the world
And
talent.
basically,
Okay.
Queen's Blood. There's like my two main things I'm 100%ing this. I kind of got to get to the Queen's Blood. Like the first like three battles, I was just like, eh, this is an okay game. And then after the next three battles, I was just like, okay, there's actually a lot of nuance when you actually have more cards in your deck. And then when you get to like the champion, your first champion, which is in the Crow's Nest, that's like when the game itself started like making sense to me. And I just realized like there's a lot of different builds and like things you can do in this game. And you can have so many types of cards that help you with that. Like, there are a bunch of ranks, and these rank, like, the multiple ranks give you, like, different utilities with either, like, crowd control, or they'll give you utilities in terms of just power net numbers, which, honestly, I feel, find the power number ones just kind of boring. I do like the crowd control a lot better, because I think it's more entertaining when you just, like, see the, your opponent only have, like, three cards on the field because you took over the rest of the field and they can't do anything about it, and you're just like, good luck.
Yeah. I actually just got did that when I went to Junon, like the one, the last opponent by the pier. And yeah, like, that Shiva card, if you, like, basically throw one lane, and then, like, I pretty much blocked it, that guy. Like, basically Dungeon Dice Monsters, just blocked him. He can't summon anymore. And once I put Shiva, boom, I had, like, 47 points total just by obliteration.
Shiva is like a monster if you use her right for crowd control, especially if you have a lot of ranks that just basically take over a lot of spaces in the field that are, like, kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. When you first get the cards, you're kind of like, ah, these awkward cards just don't do right. But when you realize that they're used for crowd control of taking over spaces that you normally can't get to fast enough, they just, like, destroy anything your opponent can do. And it's just great to see, like, oh, this card that I'd never thought actually had to use is used in a way of getting rid of your opponent's spaces so they can't summon cards. And then you just put your Shiva card in there and just be like, oh, now you don't have any ability to get anywhere.
yes, exactly. Like, that's, Queensblood is just, yeah, as you said, just so much depth to it, to the point that some people actually wanted to have, like, a mobile game of it, which I can definitely see that. So, it is definitely a very good game within a game.
I will say the Crow's Nest enemies, you haven't, I don't think you got to Crow's Nest yet because you're just reached Junon.
I just met Yuffie, so yeah. We'll be getting the Crow's Nest soon.
You're close to it. That when you get the champion, that's a really hard match, but there's one match that was harder than that for me, and that was the twins, which I think actually might be in
really
Junon. Yeah,
I beat the twins. No, in the first...
I don't know if it's just because I'm getting terrible hands at the time, but I just couldn't get past all their stupid, like, high level, like, large area cards. It's just
annoying. Because, like, but... I pretty much updated my cards, my deck, with the new cards like Shiva, like Titan, like, whenever I get that, like, Chocobo cards, I just, like, updated my deck here accordingly.
Yeah, and it's just funny because like, I think it's because I struggled so much that I put so much effort into making my deck stronger. So the rest of the, like, the matches that I played in, like, the Crow's Nest were pretty easy. When you, after Crow's Nest, you'll get to like a fairy tournament thing.
Oh, okay.
And that'll be extremely easy if you've been playing in gathering cards. Which it's kind of sad when you get to, like, the champion of the tournament and they're just like, yeah, I'm the best in the world, and you're like, I fought baby twins better than you. But right,
you guys been talking about cards, like,
okay, Queen's Blood is great. Rebirth itself as a game is also great. I haven't actually done a lot of any of the other mini games, not because I didn't really want to, because I wanted to continue with the story. The other big game that I've been playing this week is Zoria, the Age of Shattering. So that's a CRPG tactical isometric game. Ironically, I didn't know this before actually reading the press release, but the Anshar Publishing and the team behind Zoria actually helped with some of the side quests and character writing with Baldur's Gate 3, which is why they wanted to do more of that content. So they made Zoria. So that's kind of a cool, like, just to see that Baldur's Gate 3 was literally an inspiration of what they were working behind the scenes on to make their own kind of CRPG. It's just not nearly as polished and as thematic and stuff as Baldur's Gate 3, because, of course, they didn't have the... They did not have Karlach.
They failed.
I actually don't know if you can romance anyone yet.
That's a double fail then. You not have a Karlach. You don't have a Karlach that you can romance. Like, what is the point of living?
It's pretty engaging, but I do have to admit that the characters aren't necessarily stunted, but you don't get nearly the depth that you want out of them. And a lot of them kind of, I wouldn't say worship you, but they put your character on a pedestal because you're this, like, up-and-coming captain that helped basically a lot of people flee from the necromancers, and that alone was enough for that you to get on the good side of most everybody you meet that's, you know, against the necromancers. So that part, obviously, I will say Baldur's Gate 3 is the better game. I'm not going to denounce that at all. But I do think Zoria is still a fun game to min-max on. They have a variety of different types of classes and stuff that I think are interesting. And they're pretty unique because you have like a battle type cleric. You have Lancer in the sense that he's like a spear or like AoE crowd control. You have a few like different tank classes. You have a few different range classes. And you can build like your priest to do a lot of different things. Like I literally am now building my ally priest, who's supposed to just be a healer, into a magical tank because I don't have a tank because I decided to choose to be a ranger this game. And they don't give you any close range characters in the game in the beginning. So you're just constantly like, I just have to keep running and shooting. But it's fun to see that you could actually have different builds in that sense. So I think Zoria is a fun CRPG if you want to give it a chance. It's only, I think it's only like $24 too. So it's not a very pricey game. And you have a lot of different customization you can have with the classes they give you. But those are the main three games that I've been playing this week.
You want to go back to talking about Queen's Blood like for another 40 minutes? You know, I mean, just
I mean, if you just really want me.
No, don't.
I mean, like, it's at the point of like Gwent and like there's Yu-Gi-Oh and the Pokemon cards and all that. Sure, yeah, we could definitely go into another podcast.
I don't care. all right, moving on to the news, because even though it has been honestly a lighter week news-wise, we do have some interesting things to talk about. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, Yuzu. Oh, how a week has changed things.
yep.
Now, I'll be leaning on the other guys for this one because I honestly can't remember fully what happened. But to recap, Yuzu was a Switch emulator.
Yeah.
was context. Proper grammar. I can use it occasionally. Yuzu was a Switch simulator that, you know, basically lets you pirate games, let's just be honest. Like, you were pirating Switch games to play them on other systems. And Nintendo went after them. And there was a lot of questions, including from our boss, Koopa Keith, where they were wondering, you know, will Nintendo even get anything out of them? Because technically they weren't exactly doing something wrong. Oh, they got something from them. And they revealed quite a bit. Okay? So who wants to take it? Because I can't remember exactly what happened.
Alrighty, I'll take it from here.
Thank you.
Want. But so yeah, Yuzu the emulator, the team behind it, the developers behind it, had a Patreon Discord that you would have to pay like $1, $5 or whatever to get access to. And apparently they're doing a lot of shady stuff in their Discord, including like having a stash of ROMs that were being distributed to people in the Patreon Discord, which is a big no-no, in case you're wondering. The way that emulators, I mean, legally are supposed to be used is you basically use your own dumps of ROMs or your dumps of your cartridges, or some that also get used for is for actually developing homebrew apps for when you actually want to publish it to Nintendo Switch to have them go through their big orientation phase of seeing if your app can actually work on the Switch. So that was one big no-no, and apparently Nintendo's lawyers figured out because they had access to the Patreon Discord, and there was a lot that they found. And they were going to reveal even more, apparently, but before they were able to do all the revelations, they basically came to a settlement outside of the court where Yuzu would have to pay $2.4 million to Nintendo. And not just that, but they also were supposed to take out their domain immediately and give all the source code, all the emulation, all of the different technical tools that they developed to help with Yuzu straight over to Nintendo's ownership. So Nintendo now owns the rights to the Yuzu domain. They own the rights to the Yuzu emulator as it was at that time. They have now basically everything that the developers were originally working on with Yuzu itself. But with the way that the documents were also stated, they were apparently pretty vague. But for what I'm assuming is the reason is they didn't want this specific team to also be doing stuff on whatever the Switch successor is going to be as well. So instead of just saying Yuzu and like Switch emulator, they said all Nintendo console emulators basically from then until the future, they can't be worked on. And this team also was they weren't fully behind, but they were partially behind an emulator called Citra, which was the Nintendo 3DS emulator that they've been on. So that also got taken down due to the vague wording from the actual legal document that they had signed. So both of those emulators are now shut down. Their websites are down. Their GitHub repositories are down. So Nintendo did a pretty big blow on this specific developer team and on the Yuzu emulator and Citra emulators as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, don't mess with Nintendo.
Don't do shady stuff if you're trying to do things above board, even if you're in the doing it privately. Yeah. Nintendo finds a way.
Yeah, like this whole case was just kind of was crazy just watching it. Like, well, yeah, obviously piracy is a big no-no, and like with everything else that's happening, like sure, like into some to the extent, because like with emulations for obviously for Switch games, like I don't know, like I remember like there was like a many people who were downloading the round for Tears of the Kingdom, I believe, like there was like a many basically pirating that game. I mean, yeah, obviously don't pirate Switch games, but you can get them legally, sure. But when it comes to like very old games, like, I don't know, 3DS, Game Boy Advance, like old systems that you can't get them before, and Nintendo doesn't allow you to get them legally, then that's where we get into the more moral gray area. But that, again, we talked about that before. So, but yeah, this whole Yuzu case, like, eesh. Like, yeah, one to the people use you, please. Yeah, you done goofed.
Yeah.
And of course, naturally, as far as going, like, this thing, I feel like it's going to be basically with the emulation scene, it's going to be it's a hydro situation. Like, if there's one, there will be another eventually. Yeah. So,
yeah, there's already like three different Yuzu replica type emulators with all like mm-hmm. Nuzu. I think there's also a Zuzu and like a Yuya. So, yeah, there's still gonna be emulators similar to Yuzu out there, but the team specifically behind it are not allowed to work on it.
Okay, then. So yeah, this is definitely something to keep an eye on, because, like you guys said, there's already some popping back up, and we'll have to see if Nintendo goes after them, and it never ends.
Nope.
Well, you learn. All right, next up, a lighter piece of news. Princess Peach Showtime, at the time that you're listening to this, potentially, is only about 2 weeks away. And Nintendo dropped an overview trailer for the title, showing off some extra bits of gameplay for Peach in her many outfits, including boss fights with the Sour Bunch. Okay, look. Sour Bunch? Really? And the main villain is called Grape? Really? No. No. Like, and Nintendo is usually not the one to be this overt. Like,
yeah,
they're usually good with their names and all that. But no, this is Grape and the Sour Bunch. Because get it? Sour grapes. Clever-ish. So
very big emphasis on the ish.
Ish.
It's just kind of fun, like, because also I think it was also reviewed as well, like the team behind this game is also the same people who did I think it was Yoshi's Woolly World and Color Yarn.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. That's an Epic Yarn.
Epic Yarn.
But yes, they did Yoshi's Woolly World and Epic Yarn also. So they're used to doing cute games, which is I feel this is gonna be great for the casual fan out there, especially those who want Princess Peach to have, you know, the spotlight again, because she deserves it. So why not? I mean, hey, Luigi's had multiple games dedicated to him. Now it's Princess Peach's turn. So, but on that note, there is a demo out for Showtime that you can get right now. We're not sure how deep it is, but our fellow co-host, who hopefully will be back next week, Falcon Faith, she'll be doing an impressions video or a piece about it when she's done with the demo. So hopefully we'll hear wonderful things about it when the time comes. But you can get it from the store page on the Nintendo eShop. So if you want to try it out to see if you want to get it, go ahead. It's not like you have anything else to look forward to. I mean, this is it. Like, this is the last announced title we actually have a release date for. We don't know about Luigi. We don't know about Paper Mario. So, you know, we kind of need something else to look forward to. But right now, not much. Not much. And that brings us to the solo rumor piece of the day. Mario Day. Yes, Mario Day is happening on Sunday, and that means that there could be announcements for, like, let's say Luigi's Mansion and Paper Mario. Whether there will be or not, who knows at this point. Let's be honest here. 2024 has been so unpredictable with Nintendo. The Nintendo Direct was a partner showcase with nothing exclusive. Then we had the Pokemon Presents, which revealed one new game, which is coming out next year.
Yep.
And Nintendo is doing some things on Twitter for Mario Day, but it's very, very light. They've made no indications that they're going to, you know, shadow drop an announcement or two. So who knows anymore? Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but sad times here in gaming land. And other lands, depending on how much you watch the internet. But yeah, Nintendo, you got to give us something. Like, we're at a point where we need hope more than ever. And, you know, Rebirth, for those fans, was hopeful. And it lived up to the hype, especially with all things Tifa. you fans know what I'm talking about, okay? You waited your turn, and now you got what you wanted, so congrats to you. But we Nintendo fans need something to hope for. All right, like, where's our hope? You know, Peach is great, but that's not enough. You know, where's our thing to look forward to in 2024? We don't really have anything right now, so, you know, throw us a freaking bone here, okay? We're not asking for much. This time we're really not asking for much, so... You know, help us out.
I mean, just enough to get us through one or two seasons. Like, yeah, you can just put one game per season and we'll be decently okay.
Like that, decently okay. That's going to be my new statement for whenever someone asks how I'm doing. Hey, Todd, how are you doing? Decently okay. And then they'll look at me blankly and go, okay. But hey, that's how they usually look at me in life. So, moving on. Now, this is a story that I still don't know fully what to make of this, but as Will mentioned earlier, Unicorn Overlord, by the time you're listening to this, will have released. And that's a positive thing. But it comes with two caches. Number one, you might remember that we kept noting that it's not coming out to PC, which is odd because there's a whole bunch of RPGs of this nature on Steam and on other properties. And no one really knows why. Well, in a statement, they revealed that there is an agreement with VanillaWare that they cannot release the game on PC. Which is odd.
Yes. Yeah, the agreements. Yeah, you can't help but wonder, of course, naturally speculate. And of course, naturally, our boss does not like it. Because VanillaWare games are beautiful. And they should definitely be experienced by everyone, including PCs. Yes, I want as much people to experience VanillaWare games as best they can. But yeah, the fact that people, like, they can't make PC versions of this game and just only make consoles only, it's... It's an interesting point of why VanillaWare doesn't like PCs.
Yeah, and again, that's for whatever you want to think about Steam. Like, that's still like the biggest market for PC gaming, and it's just gaming in general. You can see the games that have done well on Steam, and even like console titles like say Persona or whatever, like they still judge you partially by how well you're doing on PC. I loved playing Persona 3 Reload on PC. I thought it was really good on the system. So, and because I don't have the other consoles, I need to play it on either Switch or Steam. And yes, I know Unicorn Overlord is coming to Switch, but if they gave me a PC code, I would play it there. Just saying.
Yeah, so, just like performance-wise and all that, sure.
Yeah. So, and then there's the other bit of news, which is Takafumi Noma noted on Twitter that VanillaWare ran out of money while making Unicorn Overlord. and then if that sounds familiar, it should, because this happened to their previous game, 13 Sentinels.
Yeah, this goes to show you that artwork ain't cheap.
No.
Yeah, like, if, as you know, VanillaWare's artwork, it is top. Again, all handwritten, computer graphics, all, like, the artists are top-notch of their quality. And it shows! And it drained their financial wallets. And, yeah, 13 Sentinels were, like, I feel 13 Sentinels was definitely the smaller game, if anything else, because, again, one visual novel and, like, different sceneries and all that. But I feel it was definitely much more shorter, and it wasn't, didn't emphasize too much on the CG sets and all that. But here in Overlord and Unicorn Overlord, it is a lot with the cast of characters, NPCs, and all that. Yeah, you cannot imagine how much it took away from the budget. It just kind of funny that, yeah, Vanillaware, they do good work, expensively good work. So, if you want to support Vanillaware, by all means, get a copy or buy two copies. I don't know, whatever. Support them because they definitely do need the money.
Yeah, but just the fact that this happened twice in two consecutive games is like, okay, the first time, yeah, you might have overreached, it happens, you know, et cetera, et cetera. How does this happen twice? How?
Changing in artists, different styles, recreating, because as you know, even on Twitter, our art ain't cheap. It ain't cheap.
It ain't cheap. I mean, they could always do AI art.
We had that at two. Yeah. Don't cut corners. And Vanillaware does not cut corners, even at their own deficit.
Yeah. So, yeah, please buy the game so they can have more money to not run out of it the next game they make.
Yes, please.
That's an interesting cycle right there, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Next up, we have a trio of Pokemon news pieces to talk about. First up, Pokemon Horizons. It's officially out now on Netflix. I don't know why. I thought it was already out. Like, I was thinking, oh man, I haven't had a chance to relax this weekend. Oh, I can watch Pokemon Horizons. It's on Netflix. Nope, it just came out today. It was supposed to come out in February, like right around Pokemon Day. And I think that's what tripped me up because I thought it released on the same day. But no, it's out now. So it's the first batch of 12 episodes. This is where you'll get to meet Liko, Roy, the captain, which is Pikachu, and so many other characters in this brand new anime adventure, which does not have Ash at all. So I'm curious about how it's going to go. I've heard great things online via the various Twitter people that I follow. They love posting stuff from Japan. Like, seriously, like, they'll post the episodes. I already know, like, some of the Pokemon these characters get, some of the battles they have, some of the moments that happen. I'm just like, this looks fun. This should be good. So, I'm still not a fan of the Netflix model. Like, I believe it should be watched one episode at a time. It adds the experience. It helps you kind of forget the lesser episodes because you're like, oh, next week will be better. Whereas this one is like, I hope next episode is better. And then it's not. And then it's just like, what? Why is this final season with Ash all filler episodes? So, yeah. But again, on Netflix right now, and they'll probably do the same thing that they did with Pokemon Journeys, where they drop new episodes every 3 months or so. We'll keep you updated on that. But they dropped a launch trailer. It does look good. This should be fun. Go check it out. All right. Next up, I have a let's call it a revised update on a conversation we had last week about Pokemon Legends ZA, because we were talking about what the game was going to be like. Was it going to be something that you would get to enjoy in the open world setting? Would it be contained within Lumio City? We didn't know. And then someone pointed out that the actual post for the game, I'm trying to find it right now. I thought I had it before. They noted that actually the game is going to be set entirely in Lumio City.
Which huh.
Is, yeah. So not sure how to think about that, to be honest with you. Here we go. Pokemon Legends ZA, an ambitious new entry to Pokemon video game series, launch it. Okay, that's not it. I saw it. I saw the tweet, and it said that it was going to be set entirely in Lumio City. I'll try and find it. But that's interesting because that changes everything about the title.
Yep.
I'm not sure how that would work. Here we go. Nintendo has confirmed that Pokemon Legends ZA is set entirely within Lumio City. So,
Lots of safari zones.
Yeah. Unless they're like, I don't know, hiding somebody in beneath the basement of, or, I don't know, a giant planetarium. Basically what they did in the last game, like, I don't know, just the own biomes. Like, how the heck are they gonna do that?
No idea. But it's definitely curious because, A, I was joking about it earlier, but This feels kind of like Final Fantasy VII Remake, where everything's set in Midgar, and then they just made it so that Midgar was as big as possible. You know, you visited the various sections and all of that, and, you know, it felt like a world, even though it was technically a city. Oh, here it goes. It was on the Nintendo of America Twitter feed. But, so, this makes me go back to my other comment from last week, which is, the trailer said redevelopment plan, which redevelopment means you take what you have and then you build up on it. So that makes me wonder, are we going to get a future city of Lumiose where there's, you know, more Pokemon around, where there's more things to do, like a Midgar, and you're literally just going to be going through the five sections, which they clearly highlight in the trailer. They note the five sections of Lumiose City, and what does it all mean? And of course, then, what does Zygarde have to do with all this? Do we get the Zygarde attack that I highlighted last week that we could totally get, which we totally should get? I want a kaiju battle in Lumio City, us trying to save the city from destruction, that kind of thing.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Godzilla.
It's Zygarde. I tried to do the Godzilla scream and my microphone didn't pick it up. That's not cool.
It knew it was coming.
Yeah, it knew it was coming. So, this is a new development. Ha ha ha. And I'm curious, but I'm not going to make judgments because if done right, it could work. But this is a huge departure from Arceus, where you had all of Hisui to explore, even just via the regions. And I'm wondering if they're doing this to kind of go counter to what Arceus did, you know? So that way it's not like, oh, you just did the same thing, but in a different region. Because, you know, people would have complained about that.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I'm curious. So, we'll see how that goes. Now, arguably the best piece of news that you're going to hear all week is this one, ladies and gentlemen. Toyota. Yeah, I didn't expect to hear that name. Toyota teamed up with the Pokemon Company, and they made a Maraidon motorcycle.
Ha.
This is real. Not only is it real, they posted it online, and there was a where was it? There was a car show basically going on, and there was a technology show, and Toyota decided to reveal the Maraidon bike there, and I literally looked at a whole bunch of pictures. It looks like Maraidon. Here's the key thing: you get to see it in beast mode and in bike mode.
Oh,
so they made a Pokemon Transformer bike.
So basically,
can you feed it sandwiches?
That is an excellent question. We should probably ask Toyota that.
I mean, if anything else, they made, like, I can't help but, like, with the many influences out there, like, one, the person is basically, one, they made a Kamen Rider bike, basically. Like,
yeah.
If you see it in many Sentai shows or Power Ranger shows, then you know, like, it's very similar to that kind of aesthetic. And yeah, Maraidon's bike, yeah, in both beef mode and bike mode, is just like, yeah, it's a Kamen Rider bike. So, yeah.
Okay, Scott, idea. Instead of having, like, a traditional gas tank cap, you feed the fuel through Maraidon's mouth.
Yes.
So the sandwich is the fuel. isn't that the way? So that's one idea for you.
If I had the money and the location a garage.
Yes. A garage. And the ability to ship it from Japan to the US.
Yes.
Without damaging it or costing a fortune. You know, so teleporting would be nice. Well, hey, wait a minute. Since Maraidon can swim. I had Maraidon in the games. Since Maraidon can swim, can the bike swim? There you go. Or can it ride on the water?
Now you're asking the real questions.
That's why I'm the host. But seriously, like, this is something that you look at and you just go, I need it. Like, this is nerddom personified. All right. If you can't tell me that no Pokemon fan wouldn't want this, there would be an army of Pokemon fans that would want this. Especially, could you imagine if they were to sell these even for a reasonable price? And how many Pokemon fans would want this?
There'd
be a lot.
There's a lot. Like, you know, like any kind of fandom, you know, there'll be that 1% of people that have unlimited budget wallet works and actually will buy these things.
Yeah. And hey, I'm not even saying that they're going to want to write it. They're just going to want to own it. Like, they will just drool, not over it, but upon the space that this bike fills, just say, like, I have a Pokemon motorcycle. That's dope. I do not have a motorcycle license, but I would get one to have this thing and then drive it to Comic Cons and show it off.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be the talk of the town for once. Oh, you got a celebrity over there. Oh, that's nice. I have a Maridon bike. Beat that.
I wonder if that's kind of how the same people will basically, like, they got the DeLorean or something of that sort. I feel like oh, yeah. People own the DeLorean. They're pretty much like, yeah, I own this.
I was at a Comic Con this past weekend, and someone brought in the Batman 66 Batmobile and the Ghostbusters Ecto-1. And like, it was one of the most popular things at the con. Like, people were literally going right from the door to the cars to take pictures of it. And I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't you? I took a picture of the Batmobile only. I know, because I ain't afraid of no ghost, so I don't need the Ecto-1. All right. Speaking of that con, this is the surprise story. Actually, hold on. I want to say this for last, because we'll do a really quick story. Octopath Traveler. Some eagle-eyed Nintendo fans noticed that the original game is currently unavailable on Nintendo eShop.
Huh.
It's odd. So this happened for like a day or so, and then Square Enix confirmed that there was, I guess, a glitch of some kind that made it unavailable. They are working to fix it. They're not removing it from the platform. Don't worry, though, if you're buying it 6 years after it came out, you might have a problem with yourself. I mean, there's a sequel out, people. So, I mean, that'd be two games you need to purchase, which I recommend. I liked both of them. Yes. First one was better, though. So, yeah. But that was interesting that it was just unavailable. And I checked this out for myself. And it is true that it is not currently. Actually, let me look it up, see if it's fixed. Octopath Traveler. Nintendo Switch. Drum roll, please. Thank you. Loading. Okay, stop. Now you're annoying me. It's still loading, so I'm just going to assume that it's not available. But yeah, that's really weird that it's only on the Nintendo eShop not available. So they haven't fixed it yet, but Square Enix did make a response saying, hey, we are going to fix this. It's not intentional. How about you? So that's curious, though. Why just the Switch version, I wonder? I don't know.
Good question.
I try. Yeah. All right, now for the story that I call the surprise story of the week. So here's how it goes. In Peoria, Illinois, where I actually was literally just at for a Comic-Con, the police department... Yeah, this is going to be a great start, isn't it? The police department decided, hey, why don't we do something special to try and get new recruits into the police department? Okay. What do you have in mind? Well, we could do a nice big ad campaign showing the wonders of the police department. Okay, that's good. That's good. What else? How about we do like charity drives and other things to show them that we're a great part of the community? They should be a part of us. You know, that's smart. That's smart. Hey, how about we do a spinoff of a Call of Duty poster and tell them idiot kids to get out of their video game worlds and come into the real ones? You're hired! No, this is not a joke. I'm really looking at the poster right now. The Peoria Police Department literally did a Call of Duty spinoff poster. And they said, Peoria Police Department, stop playing games and answer the Call of Duty.
No.
Oh, but it gets worse. It gets worse. Because remember, this is a Call of Duty poster, right? So they can't just show regular police officers.
No,
that wouldn't invoke the spirit of the video game parody. So they showed off three fully armored, geared up police officers, basically pointing their guns at the camera. Wait, there's more. It gets worse. All these officers are middle-aged white dudes.
right.
Yeah.
Dude, This is not how you gotta get anybody recruiting to your cause. Look, you more or less have to be born a nerd, otaku, weeb, whatever fandom you are, you pretty much are in it. And if you're gonna try to appeal to it, at least put in some bloody effort. This is just like, I don't know, a Mad TV Saturday Night Live sitcom parody that is just so horrible of an advertisement or recruitment thing. Is like, dude. Yeah. Like, it's not like, how you doing, young kids? Like, quit embarrassing yourself.
Yeah. And honestly, actually, now I want this story to make it on SNL because I'm sure they would just blow it out of the water.
But I mean,
it actually gets worse. Cause
if you
actually look at the poster, there are three dudes on it, okay? One of them you actually can't even see. All you see is his hand. The hand holding the gun, mind you, but the hand. So they weren't even smart enough to do proper Photoshop and put these guys in a position where all three of them are featured. You see two and a third. It's not even... Like, what is this? And then as many people put... They posted this on Facebook, which was never... Yeah, and not only were the comments hilariously, you know, violent in terms of, like, this is tone deaf, this is insensitive, this is possibly racist... It's an insult to, you know, video gamers and the police department. Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, the police department, by definition, aren't going to be armored up and loaded for bear with assault rifles and machine guns every single day.
It's usually a special day and not always good parts.
Okay, hold on. Let's rephrase. Let's call it emergency situations. It's a special day, our fellow officers. We get to go guns blazing today. No, those are for emergency situations. And also, key thing to note here, not everyone in the police department is actually qualified to get into those situations with that kind of gear. If you actually watch police shows, which some of them can be incredibly accurate, they're often in just their regular patrol uniforms with a regular sidearm. No tactical gear, no heavy weaponry, unless they actually need it. You know, it's a situational kind of thing. And yet they're saying, hey, get off, stop playing games and answer the Call of Duty because this is what the police department is like. No, it's not. Also, I've been to Peoria. If they have a situation that requires that, it's a really bad day. A really bad day in Peoria, Illinois. Like, it's not the biggest town in Illinois. It's one of the bigger cities, I'll grant you, but it's not Springfield or definitely not Chicago. Heck, even Chicago couldn't pull this off, and that's Chicago, where they actually have Chicago PD shows. I'm just saying. Thank you, NBC. So, this is the kind of thing that ticks me off, because first of all, you're insulting video gamers by trying to say, hey, get off, stop playing video games and actually get into service. I play video games. I have played Call of Duty over the years, mainly on PlayStation and PC via the Modern Warfare series. I'm not cop material. That's just the truth. I don't like guns. I never have. I like them in video games because I'm not actually hurting anybody except that noob who gets in my way and thinks they can just come into my server and start shining. No, you do not. You're getting pawned. Hear me? Not pwned. That's old school. You're getting pawned. Tag the show reference. I am not cop material. So I'm going to keep playing Call of Duty. And there are plenty of people who play Call of Duty, but video games as a release, as a way to just enjoy their day. The director of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth recently said that gaming can give people a reason to live.
I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly, 100%.
Absolutely. And there were a lot of people who talked about how video games got them out of difficult situations. Speaking of Attack of the Show, former co-host Gina Darling noting that she had a terrible childhood, and it was video games that gave her a release. That's what they are. They're an escape. Now, yes, if you put the wrong game into the wrong person's hands, bad things can happen. But last time I checked, that can happen with a whole bunch of other things too, like TV shows, movies, comic books. Which remember the comics code that happened actually because they got overly sensitive about that, and so on and so forth. You out there do not have the right to say that people should stop playing video games and go do this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, get off your high horse.
Yeah, among other things. Or in the words of Henry Ford, get off your soapbox, take the soap with you. Epic Rap Battle is a history reference. I'm on fire! So, But seriously, I found out about this story like the day before I was going to Peoria, Illinois for the con. I'm just like, what are the odds of me finding this?
Like, that is weird.
It was so weird. So, oh, and there's actually one more part of the story. You ready for this? The police chief of Peoria, Illinois made a statement on this.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. He goes, quote, "It was never my intention to offend any of our community members with the recruitment flyer that was posted on our Facebook page yesterday. It was simply a recruitment image I thought would appeal and connect to a younger generation. I take ownership of this and sincerely apologize," end quote.
I call.
Also, how much do you want to bet he's a middle-aged white dude too? Just saying. So, ladies and gentlemen, there are reasons to not like video games. There are. And there are reasons why you should tell people to stop playing video games. For example, they've been playing them for too long. It happens to all of us, even us adults, all right? We have to be in moderation with the games we play, even when they're really, really good, like a Persona or a Final Fantasy or Baldur's Gate, Karlach. Anyway, or Pokemon or Legend of Zelda or whatever. You know, you can go on super long binges, but then you need to realize, like, hey, I need to get up and do other things. That's a personal thing, and you absolutely should help someone when they have been playing nothing but video games. Say, hey, go outside, touch grass. But I can cut grass in Breath of the Wild. That's the point. But it's even good looking grass. That's not the point. Telling them to get off their butts and answer the Call of Duty. No, that is not. First of all, you're not going to connect with the younger generation. You're just going to tick them off, especially this younger generation. All right. Like, I'm talking the kids that are actually younger than us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Isn't it sad that we're becoming the median between the OG people and then the newer gamers who are just like terrible? It's like, yeah, it's not a good period for us to be in. Gentlemen.
Again, Simpson more or less has that perfect line. They predicted everything. They even have the perfect line for any kind of situation. Like, I used to be with it once, and now they changed what it was, and now what it is now strange and scary. It will happen to you, and we're now into that era now.
It's like, when did we become the reasonable ones? Like, seriously, when did we have to be the ones to, you know, like, be the middle ground or whatever? Like, when did that happen? I don't like it. Can I go back to just enjoying video games without having all this nonsense going on in my life?
Sadly, the time does not allow that.
Definitely not. Okay, moving on to our main event. Thank God. We're here to celebrate now the birthday of the Nintendo Switch once again. Because, if we're being honest here, it's quite possible that this is the last time we will willingly celebrate. Willingly celebrate the Switch's birthday. And because the new console might be out by this time next year. Or not. So, let's have a little fun as we enter the Temple of Time. Alright, so once again, as we've done in many past podcasts around this time of year, we're going to dip back into our memories, and given that this is potentially the end, Let's talk about the moments that we didn't expect with the Switch. The ones that truly surprise us over these now 7 years, 7+ years of existence, where we went, oh my gosh, they're doing that. Oh my gosh, they're doing that. Oh my gosh, I can't wait for this. I can't wait for that. What were the moments that really just took us back and went, wow, Nintendo is really trying. Like, they're trying to make this succeed. Because we talked about it a lot that, you know, this was their last chance in many respects. They had to make this work or they would be a software company, which I know Phil Spencer would have loved. Moron. Thankfully, Phil did not make much headlines recently. Although he did say, Scott, that he tried Skull and Bones for like an hour and he couldn't get into it. So even he has some good.
I think anyone can know what a boring game feels like, you'd think, at least.
And then he's probably like, are we sure we needed this on Xbox? I don't think we did. Anyway, so what were some of the times where like Nintendo or a reveal really took you aback and you got to enjoy it in the build up to it? Scott, let's start with you.
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, at least, was always the Smash Brothers reveals. And so of course, my favorite one is Sora.
Of course, of course.
I had to constantly rewatch that thing, even though I was in class.
I cry every time.
Yes,
every time. Is that it?
No.
Okay. So you just dramatic pausing there and just
I
like
I just need you to understand the levity of the weight of Sora.
Ah.
I was also a big fan of the DS when we had the reveal of the dual screen. At the time, I don't think I was that big into it though. It wasn't until I actually, you know, tested the games myself that I actually could feel the appeal of the Nintendo DS.
Wait, why are you talking about the DS? We're talking about the Switch.
Because the DS is what started the whole trend to get to the Switch of handheld devices.
I don't know if I agree with that one. That's a bit of a reach, you know, because the Wii U did, you know, the true setup for the Switch. We've talked about that in the past, too.
Yeah. It's fair, but I mean...
Focus on the Switch, dog.
No! Fine. I do think guys are actually really excited to see some of the things that we got, like having the Persona series on Switch.
There you go.
Or most of the Persona series, darn you, Persona 3 Reload. that was a game I was really excited that we got to have on Nintendo Switch, because it's one of those games that just perfectly works on the system.
Yeah.
I was also a big fan. Well, I mean, the whole reason I even... got a Switch was Breath of the Wild, so I mean,
of course. I mean, that's the game.
I feel
that...
like that's like 90% of people.
Yeah,
it's just an absolute must have when it first came out. Exactly.
Yeah, it was the system seller, and it worked. The other system seller was Animal Crossing. No.
All right, that's some good ones, Scott. Will, how about you? What were your true like? Oh my gosh, this is happening moments with the Switch.
If anything else, one like the best moment was probably indeed Persona 5 finally coming to the Switch. If anything else, Persona 5 Royal, when we were like begging, literally not the spinoff, but the mainline games of Persona 3, Persona 4, and Persona 5 actually coming to the Switch library. That was a great time period. And I was just ecstatic about that. And of course, naturally, like with Scott as well, the Smash Bros is always a magical time. Like, yeah, Sora finally being admitted, Joker finally being was announced in Smash Brothers. Of course, naturally, just like the lineup of who's to come, of like, yeah, Paramitra, Sephiroth, Terry Bogard, all these characters that has been so far. Like, yeah, Smash announces. Always is a magical moment, if anything else. And
this magic moment. Da, 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 da. Sorry.
Yeah, the many years I've like, yeah, of course, naturally, the best moment here in the NEP is obviously when us the three like you, me, and Tyler pre-ordered that thing. That was definitely a very good, happy moment. A very exciting moment of our time period when the Switch first came out.
Yeah, there was a surprise. We actually got it on the actual night it went open for purchases. Yeah. Like, that shouldn't have happened. Yet all three of us got the Switch. Like, awesome.
Yeah, we got it, and it went sold out for quite a while after that. Yeah. And yeah, like... just reflecting, and now we're heading to the eighth year of the Switch. Is just, I don't know. Like, I definitely have it's so many memories to really list out about. Again, Smash, Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild, and like just of course, naturally Super Mario Odyssey. Odyssey was definitely a beautiful game in of itself, and definitely a Mario game that even rivals that of like. Mostly for in terms of like hype level, like it actually changed the industry, which I feel honestly was an industry changer in my opinion. Like all these memories, and of course this is a big trilogy. Yeah, this is a big Chronicles trilogy.
So
like coming onto the Switch as well, like being first one and yeah second third game, and of course naturally still waiting for X.
Where's X, Nintendo? this was the year Nintendo just dropped and said fine, shut up, here it is. But you're not doing that, are you, Nintendo?
Yeah, until whenever they decide to revive that coffin. We'll see. But yeah, like all these memories is just definitely that's pretty much I could definitely say a lot more, but those are pretty much the only ones that really pop off in my mind. Is like, yeah, from getting the Switch to having all these solid games coming out, like from first party, from third party, Persona, Smash Brothers, Mario, Zelda, and everything, and of course many other games in between. It just feels, I don't know, it feels like Nintendo's MO is nostalgic. All these things that's like the past 8 years, from Amiibos to just everything in between, the Splatoon 3 concerts. There's just too many memories to really list off of that I personally feel was like a great part of the Switch life cycle. So yeah, it's just too much. I could pretty much go say all night.
I think for me, I'll start with the easy one, which is Smash Brothers, of course, because there were so many great reveals that just brought smiles to our faces. And ones that you didn't mention were King K. Rool and Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, those ones have been asked for forever. And, you know, since a certain someone isn't making Banjo-Kazooie franchise anymore, Phil! It's coming down the pipeline. No, it's not. We all know. We all know your lies. We know your lies.
Same pipeline that Perfect Dark is too.
yeah, we're Perfect Dark. Yeah, where is Joanna? Okay, she could be in Smash Brothers technically, so why not? Remember the first one was on the N64, but Banjo Kazooie and King K. Rool and having the parody trailers of one another was really fun. Sakurai, you could just tell was having so much fun with those trailers. How about Metroid Dread? Like, that was a huge surprise, because remember, we were all waiting for Metroid Prime 4, and they go, okay, hi, yeah, about that, no, we're gonna put that aside, but hey, here's Mercury Steam with the next new game. It's one that's technically been 15 years in the making. We're finally making Metroid Dread, and it was awesome! You know, Game of the Year, best-selling Metroid game of all time, and it just came out of nowhere. There was no hints of this. There was just, oh, here's Metroid Dread. Great! Awesome! Or for me personally, the reveal of Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, for the longest time, we were only getting handheld Fire Emblem games. Awakening, Fates, Shadows of Valentia. And then we're like, are we ever going to get this back on console? And then here comes Three Houses, easily one of, if not the best Fire Emblem game ever. It's not the best because Ike's not in it. But Path of Radiance Forever. But... you know, this game was just so good with the four different path options, the incredibly deep battles, the great characters. Yes, all the romance options. There were a lot of great characters for us to wed, you know, mainly Catherine and Shamir. And yeah, I'll even throw Manuela in there. And a lot of people like Dorothea, obviously. I don't know why people would marry Edelgard, but there are weirdos out there. Isn't that right, Will?
Hey, don't look at me. I'm married Shamir.
See, I knew you were a man of culture, Will. I knew you were a man of culture. But, you know, that game was just so great. And then even with Engage, you know, that was a surprise that it was paying tribute to all the games that came before it while potentially teasing what came next. It was good stuff. And I'm excited for this. Like, I'm excited for so many franchises because of what the Switch did. And technically even what it didn't do, because we're still hoping that we're going to get that next Donkey Kong game and the next Star Fox title, next Golden Sun. Where is it?
Please.
Or F-Zero. And I have no doubt there's going to be Xenoblade Chronicles 4. And it's going to be great because 3 was just... Oh my, I'm sorry, but when I cry watching a video game story, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It's
yes,
so
yes,
beautiful. But if I was to go to the biggest surprise, I would honestly say, it's probably a little bit unexpected for me to say this, but I'm surprised by how many franchises I found myself getting into or back into because of the Switch. And here's what I mean by that. The Wii and the Wii U didn't have the best third-party lineup. And part of that was because, this is the truth. And part of it was because they didn't have the graphics and the processing power. I mean, yes, the Wiimote was great, but a lot of people just did gimmicky games to piggyback off of it. Like, name a really innovative third-party game that came out on the Wii. Exactly. So I could think of some that tried, but they never really hit. But with the Switch, you know, they were coming out the wazoo. Like, everyone was throwing something on here. And, like, some of the biggest ones to stand out were, of course, Octopath Traveler. Like, that started a whole love of Team Asano games for me. I didn't even know who this team was, and suddenly I'm buying every game they get. Octopath, Triangle Strategy, terrible name. Such a terrible name. Bravely Default 2. And if they make another one, I'm probably going to get that because it's going to be great, because this team knows what they're doing. Alive. I bought that one because it was that team. And then you got... Capcom, they brought over Monster Hunter, and everyone's like, oh yeah, we're gonna have a Nintendo Monster Hunter game, woo, big deal. And it's like one of the biggest things of that year, and it's still doing great. And then they had to port it to other systems just because everyone, Phil, wanted to actually get in on the money of it all, because the Switch version was dominating. It was a Monster Hunter game, was doing great on a Nintendo console. Who would have thought? And then, of course, as you guys said, Atlus, they brought over 3, 4, and 5, the original 3, 4, and then Persona 5 Royal. And that was my introduction to the Persona series. All right? And I played 5, then I played 4, then I played 3 Reload. See, it's a lovely little reverse transition order there. And 5 still the best, though, followed closely by Reload. But, you know, I never had that chance because I'm like, I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't going to get it on PC, even though I knew 4 was there. And I'm kind of glad I didn't. But you know, I had the urge to try this one. And then with, of course, Platinum Studios, you know, they had Astral Chain. I almost said Astral Blade. That's another I heard it's a Stellar Blade too. Wink. They had Astral Chain, which was so much fun. So much more fun than I thought it was. And then, of course, Bayonetta 3, then Bayonetta Origins, and so on and so forth. And like, everyone was trying to bring their A game to the Switch because they knew that if they made a great Sparks of Hope, which, you know, Ubisoft called a failure because they suck. The game was great, but
probably sold more than Skull and Bones.
if it didn't, I'm going to be very disappointed, because we all know which one was the superior title. And hey, yeah, remember, Sparks of Hope was better, and it was only a AAA title. How dare it do better? But you know, the third parties, they came to play, and there were times when you were just like, oh man, they're bringing this game to the Switch, oh man, this company is doing an exclusive with the Switch. And that's why I was actually disappointed when 2024 came around and there's no like major third party titles for me to look forward to right now. You know, Persona Reload didn't come out on the Switch, Yakuza, obviously Rebirth was never going to, but like, that, it's just a point of fact.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing one. A Tekken obviously wasn't going to, but you know, there were these games that could have been on there. Hi-Fi Rush, like with the Xbox thing. Hi-Fi Rush. I know you described why that was the case, Scott, but I'm just saying again.
Yeah.
The fact. You know, that would have been so cool to have on Switch. I have no doubt that would have done great on Switch. But,
it would have.
And I know, right? it feels like a Switch game, and that's the thing. Like, Nintendo said, "Hey, look, we have this console. It's going to be special. you should make something for it. And I, and even by their standards, they admitted, like, the third party company said, hey, we didn't get in on this early enough because we didn't believe. And then they believed and they're like, crap, we got to put all sorts of great things on here. And they did. Like, one of the biggest things that the Switch successor, whatever it is, has to do is mimic the greatness of this third party lineup, because there were times when the third party games were doing just as good, if not better, than some of the first party ones. And in terms of quality, not exactly sales numbers, but quality wise, they were great. And I was so surprised by that. Like, I've got so many Switch games that are third-party titles because I wanted to try them out, even if they were franchises I never dipped into before, like a Persona, like some of the Team Asano games, and so on and so forth. And then there were times where, like, oh, this is a sequel to this great third-party game that I know will be great. I can't wait for it. I was looking forward to that just as much as the first-party titles. That's how you know you're doing great, when you're having love for both the first and the third-party titles. And Nintendo did that so well. Until this year, of course. But hey, there's still time. We've got less than 10 months, but, you know, times change. Things could happen any day now. Any day now. So, they took me by surprise, and I hope that these surprises continue, because we really need it with all these reports that are coming out about Switch 2 not coming out till, you know, next fiscal year. I don't want to wait that long. Fun fact, the only games I've honestly played this year, 2024, have been Baldur's Gate, Persona Reload, Apollo Justice, which is multi-platform, and Side Order, which I played for literally a day and a half.
Yeah.
I beat and put down, and I have no urge to play it again. Sorry, Nintendo. Sorry, not sorry, Rhesus. So I need a little something, Nintendo. So, you know, if you got any surprises left, now is the time, because I don't want this Switch to go out on a sour note, because we've had so many great times with it. All the announcements, the game reveals, the directs, the predictions, the drafts that we've done, like trying to guess what Nintendo would do this year, and more times than not failing miserably with our picks. But hey, that's the game for you. As the NFL and NBA can attest to, not every draft pick is a winner. We have to trust the process, though. Right, Tyler? Trust the process. So, yeah, the Switch has just been, it's been so great to see and watch unfold. And, you know, now we're in, you know, year 8 or whatever, and we're coming to the end, and we don't want to see it end, because it's been such a great console. And there's so many other games we didn't talk about or talk about in depth, because there's just so much to cover. Like, this console is going to be one of the the top 3 best-selling consoles of all time. It could be number 1 by the time of its, you know, stops selling.
Yeah.
That doesn't just happen. You have to do something right to get there. Final thoughts before we sign off?
Like,
Switch was a magical console. It deserves its legacy it has.
It pretty much is. Like, the Switch, again, from doomed to failure, was supposedly doomed to failure, but now just brought back to the success that it is. It just proves Nintendo's magic. They made something beautiful and the world benefited from it. So if this indeed does the sun setting of the Switch, then by all means, here's hoping that the next console at least has some of that same grandeur it has, or some of that Nintendo magic that we know about in the successor. But yes, the Switch, you were a beautiful console.
So let's hope Nintendo has at least a few more things not named Mario or Luigi to send you off into the sunset well, because you deserve it. We're so grateful to you, Nintendo Switch. Happy birthday. So long, and thanks for all the fish. Which we probably got in Animal Crossing. No, nothing? Nothing there? Come on. That was good. Fine. Be that way. And with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo RTM Podcast. What are some of your favorite memories of the Nintendo Switch? Of the games you played, the surprises it offered, and just the overall sense of what it meant to you as a gamer for the last 7+ years. And do you hope that Nintendo has at least a few more surprises for the system before it goes out? Let us know in the comments below. Also, are you going to try the Princess Peach Showtime demo? Are you getting Unicorn Overlord? Are you going to try and watch Pokemon Horizons this weekend? Do you want the Mirai'den bike? And please say yes. there's no, you can't say no. Okay, that's just being me. I mean, I guess you're not a Pokemon fan, but even then, it's just cool looking. Why wouldn't you want this thing? Let us know in the comments below. So, Forest, Cloak at Scott, Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but you're not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.